Hello, adventurers, and welcome back to Commune, the DM's Essentials Kit. My name is Alec, and I'm going to be your Dungeon Master for this evening. Before we dive into our episode proper, we have a few announcements. As we've said before, Commune is now on Twitch. We've been having a lot of fun doing things from a Pokemon SoulSilver Nuzlocke to a D&D actual play stream called Intelligence Save. Have you missed the live episodes? Well, you're in luck. We're now on YouTube. Check out our full playthroughs and watch our D&D adventure from the beginning. Links to that will be in our description. Next up, if you want to stay up to date on all things Commune, including our stream schedule, when we post new episodes, and to catch some stream highlights, following our social media accounts is the best way to do that. Now, on to our guest. Today I sit down with the amazing Sean, aka Mr. Shickadance. He is one half of the Lore Dump podcast, one of the innkeepers over at the Welcome Inn, the dungeon master for the Off the Rails campaign, and one of the players in the Conundrum Company. Today, we talk Twee's Inception, fun villains, and much, much more. So with that, please sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of Commune.
I'm being filmed.
Oh. Hello, dear listeners.
Hello, adventurers, and welcome back to the Commune Podcast. My name is Alec, and I will be your Dungeon Master for this evening. Today, I am joined by the wonderful Sean. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good.
But how
happy
are
to be here.
Good.
I'm doing all right.
I'm happy to finally have you here, buddy.
I'm happy to finally be here.
Hey ho, hey ho. If you want to introduce yourself for the people, let them know who you are, what you're doing.
Hello, people. I am Sean, Mr. Shickadance on all things social media in different various formats that I don't remember at the time. So if you see Mr. Shickadance with underscores in the middle or whatever, that's probably me. If not, it's someone pretending to be me. No, I'm not that famous. No one will pretend to be me. You hate to see it. D&D stuff, Welcome in Twitch channel, probably my favorite place to be. Yeah, I'm in two of the campaigns there, which was fun.
Sweet. Mm-hmm. I've known you for a little bit. No, I'd say like I think
a few weeks.
It's been 48 hot hours since we've like first connected.
it was
March.
Yeah, back when quarantine started.
I had jumped on the Clock app and then started following a bunch of people, and then
The clock app,
yeah. I love that. It's really good.
I call it Kesha's Instagram.
I do like that one too. I do like Kesha's Instagram. And I'd followed like you and Josh and everybody there, and somehow I got roped into running a one shot for you guys, which was a lot of fun. And then
it was a blast. That was the Hive Queen,
the Brood Queen, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was. The flavor was so good.
We love the flavor, but yeah, it was fun. And then a beautiful romance, don't tell Josh, started to blossom from there, you know. But let's focus on you for a little bit. How did you, my friend?
I'm honored.
How did you get into D&D and tabletop role play games? When that all gets started for you?
Oh man. My story begins
1496.
No, my story is very much like most stories. It's a very generic D&D story where I found out about Critical Role. And then it was like, okay, I can dig this. And it was 7 days later and I had caught up on all the episodes so far. And I was like, well,
fuck. I have nothing left.
Yeah. I think they were on like episode 60 or something of the first campaign. So I binged that whole thing when I was off from school for the summer. Oh, so good.
Just went buck wild on that Vox Machina ship, dude.
I bought the books. I was like reading through the books while watching the show, learning how to play the game. I was having a blast. And I realized that this was something I always wanted to do without knowing it existed.
Sure.
I wanted to pretend to be somewhere else.
Yeah.
I've
always kind of described D&D in my own life as like the natural evolution of like my nerdy side.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I completely agree with that, because like same as you, I saw Critical Role, went buck wild on it, and then I was like, yeah, okay. But it's nice to hear that you actually like bought the books and read and prepared. I was like, oh, I can just do this.
No, well, because I wanted to understand the game.
Yeah.
And if I'm being honest, it goes a little bit further back than that. There was I watched a lot of Rooster Teeth when I was younger.
Oh, sure.
And they had a show called Heroes and Halfwits.
Yeah.
Which was them introducing people into D&D. And I watched that and I was like, this is really cool. I want to buy the book and see how they're doing all this, because it makes no sense to me. They're just being fantastically cool people. And then I bought the book and started learning with that. And then I watched a panel they mentioned. They mentioned Critical Role on their panel. And I was like, oh, okay, there's other people who do this. So I went to look and found them, and that's where I got lost.
So it's like a seven layers of Kevin Bacon type of deal, where you're just like falling. Yeah. I can respect that. Yeah. So you kind of fell into the books and doing more of the research of like the mechanics and everything like that. Does that kind of carry through to how you play the game now? Like, are you more mechanics heavy, or how do you operate, my friend?
I'm kind of, I free flow a lot.
Sure. You know?
Because, again, I'm not going to bring up Critical Role too much, but that's how I learned using the book and that show. I saw where someone was able to take what the book says and make it work in a different way on their show for the situation that made sense. Because he's pretty good about making it make sense in the situation they're in. So that's sort of what I picked up on. I know more of the rules because I learned from the book. But I'm also more okay with veering away from that stuff. That makes sense.
Oh, definitely. As I've progressed as a dungeon master, I think it's easier to make the rules kind of less of a focus in the game, if that makes sense. Because you know like what's important and what you can kind of let fall to the wayside, right?
Yeah. It's very important to gauge how much you can trust your players.
Yes.
That's probably more important than knowing what rules you can change.
That's always the wild card. Like, yeah. You never know what this group of fucking insane people are going to want to do.
But yeah, and if you don't know them that well, you can be like, okay, I'll let the rule slide this one time because it's really cool. And then the next time you don't let it slide as much and they get mad.
Yeah, you hate to say
potentially.
It.
Potentially
causing some problems.
God, you hate to see it.
Yeah, hey, I truly hate to see it. So when you kind of dove into that research, were you pretty keen on being a dungeon master right from the get?
Oh God, no. I was looking at what characters I was going to make. I was circling spells I was going to add. I was like, these cantrips sound really cool.
The spies.
Yeah. Looking at all the warlocky vocations I would take. And it wasn't until I found out that, oh, no one else runs the game. Yeah. There's like seven people who run this game. Gotcha. Okay. So I guess I'll do it.
The sad resignation of it's going to be me.
It's gonna be me.
Perfect.
Me and Commune live on this wavelength vibe. Where we just sing songs to each other. It's great.
Really good. It's really good. So what was your first DM experience? Were you running a module?
Oh, it was bad. It was bad.
Oh, yeah.
Just everyone out there who hasn't DM'd before, everyone's first time is bad for everything. Every time you do the first time, everything.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Yeah.
It was, I ran a one shot for some people I kind of knew. Like, we were, one of the kids in that group was the DM, but he wasn't there that week.
Oh, sure.
And we still wanted to play. So I was like, I'll run something. It's very difficult having that shift because now you're the person who has to tell them no. It was a very simple one shot, ran through a few small encounters and unmemorable. They found someone in the woods. They'd find someone. I don't even remember the exact story, but it was just a very simple story beat adventure. And most of it was made up on the fly because I prepared everything completely wrong, which is fine.
Well, completely valid. I mean, I decided I didn't want to start with like a module. I didn't want to start with a one shot. I don't even think I knew what a one shot was when I started. So I was like, I'm gonna create a world. I'm going to go balls to the wall, buck wild, completely waste so much time sitting at a computer, like typing shit that's never going to come up. And from watching like Critical Role and Matt Mercer and even listening to the Adventure Zone, I'm like, okay, they know what's behind every corner. So I also have to know what's behind every corner.
Yeah.
So it turned into a very gross railroad. Like, okay, we'll figure out, you guys got to go here to make this happen. You guys got to go here to make that happen.
Yeah.
So it was, it wasn't fun. It was not fun at fucking all.
Yeah. That's the thing I think new DMs fall into easily, is that I need to know everything just in case they ask me a question. It's like, you don't need to, just, you know, throw in a joke over there if there's a blank space. Just throw in some meme shit. They love that.
I was so hung up on the idea of D&D being like this high art, because of like obviously how incredible everybody who like role plays and, you know, how people, certain dungeon masters run the game and like describe things. I'm like, I have to do this, you know? So the idea of kind of, I was always afraid of that silence, right? That kind of like, oh, well, what's over here? And I'm like, what?
Or you say something and it's like, you said that was somewhere else.
Oh, yeah. I've been caught in those moments and I've been like, I currently am shitting my pants. I have no fucking idea how to operate at this point.
So. Well, D&D is a, forgive the pun, commune old storytelling. So it's not just one person telling the story, so you don't need to know everything. You know, a lot of the times, the best moments come from you turning to a player and say, okay, what happens next?
Oh, for sure.
And they run with it, and you're like, this is good, and I will use it in the future.
The way I handle world building, and I'll ask you this in a second, but I really go broad from the jump. You know, I have the planet that they're on, and then I break down continents, and then I start to break down like organizations and people that operate within this world. And that's like as far as I go, you know, and then the campaign starts.
Yeah.
And seeing how the players interact with certain organizations, certain regions, certain kind of quirks of the world that I've created along the way, that's when I start to flesh out more. And I'm like, okay, this feels right. This feels like the natural evolution of where this thing's going to go. How do I want to expand on that, right? Yeah. How do I want to make this feel more lived in and more like the world is happening around the players, not that the world has already happened and the players just stumble upon it? You know what I mean?
This is a good balance to
strike. That's how I do it. How, because you run a lot of homebrew.
I've only ever run homebrew. I've actually never run a module.
I can't
do it because this is a lie. I've tried twice.
I feel that though.
I've tried with Dragon Heist, which I think is a very good module up until the actual intrigue starts. Then it loses me. So up until chapter 3 where the fireball goes off, I love the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I've tried to run against Horde of the Dragon Queen, Tyranny of Dragons.
Yeah.
And I got like to level 3 and I was like, okay, it makes me do too much work.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do that work and make it my own thing.
Sure.
So I've just always decided to homebrew. So you're asking, I forget what the question was.
You're good. No. So wait, who am I? Where the fuck am I?
Know, right? I was just watching The Mandalorian. What happened?
How do you go about the process of creating homebrew? And obviously this kind of ties into a cool project you're part of, the Lore Dump.
Oh, right. I should have started that.
That's okay.
I should have talked about that way earlier. Yeah, I'm on a podcast called Lore Dump with Josh.
I got you.
He's also on this podcast. Where I start is most of my homebrewing starts from a single town concept or like a concept for a place. Because the first world I ever made, it was sort of the concept of a single continent where there was this large society that lived on it, and then it fractured into pieces, and each one of those parts of the society was like hyper focused on whatever section of the city that was.
Yeah
So like the financial district was all these rich people and stuff like that. And it's boring.
No, it's not.
It's terribly boring. I'm asleep. But the most recent one, the one that's on Off the Rails.
Yes, Off the Rails campaign, Friday nights at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
Over on the Welcome Inn. That one started from the city, the capital city called Abaddon. I had designed that city for another campaign that was going to be a crime detective D&D campaign.
Are you talking like Dick Tracy noir D&D?
I'm talking like straight up noir.
Ooh.
like gritty crimes and you guys had to solve them. So I built the whole city just for that campaign so it could like take place in a city and not feel boring.
Yeah.
And then I said, well, this has to be a world around the city. So I got to build more stuff. So I started making the world around it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden there was this whole big, you know, place I had to fill with stuff.
Yeah.
It was like a little playground. So I'm very much the opposite of you. I don't zoom in, I zoom out.
I was going to say, it's really interesting to hear how other people kind of tackle the idea of like, what is this world and how do I kind of pick and construct
and you know what? And build every single one of those is correct.
Exactly. Like that was an idea that I was really hung up on when I started DMing. And I don't know if it's the same for you, but like doing it the right way, right?
Oh, yeah.
Whatever the quote unquote right way is.
Mm-hmm.
I was so worried about, you know.
Like, how does everyone else do it? I don't
know.
Gotta find your own vibe.
Fuck, man. So you brought it up. You're one of the innkeepers at the lovely the Welcome Inn.
Oh yes, I am. I'm one of the three.
Well, the one of the three chosen. how did that from your perspective? Because when I had Josh on the podcast, that was pre-Twee. It was like right on the cusp before.
I think we just started talking about it even.
You know, months later, what was that inception like for you? And what was it like being a part of, you know, starting this really wonderful cultivated D&D community?
Oh God. Most of the credit for that goes to Josh for even reaching out to all of us. Cause he was really the driving force in getting it started. We were already in his campaign, the Conundrum Company, every Saturday at 6 on the same channel. Got to give him a shout out. Fantastic, fantastic DM. Great world. He is currently homebrewing in Greyhawk, which is a great character study on how to change something that already exists to fit you.
Yeah, he's doing a fucking magical job at that.
He's so rich and I love him. But he reached out to me, I think, first before Parker. And he said, you can say no to this, but I want to take my name off of the channel we play our games on, and I want to turn it into some sort of Twitch community that we can build for D&D, because, you know, we were both so in love with the game that it's all we ever really talked about. And I immediately said, that sounds amazing. And we both realized that we would need someone else to help us. So
rain in the chaos.
We played it with Parker, because we would just stare at each other and make goblin jokes all day. So we did ask Parker because we felt that she was smarter than us, more put together than us, and was like always knew exactly what was going on. I was taking notes, and they're like, we need someone with that perspective.
This is perfect.
Yeah. And the three of us just started hopping in meetings together. And I think Parker said when we first asked her, she thought she was in trouble and gonna get kicked out of the campaign we were in. Did I do something wrong? We're like, no, it's just the opposite. We want to bring you in on something.
Yeah.
And from there, it just sort of spiraled into something that we never could have really dreamed of it being.
Yeah.
Which is amazing, but at the same time, kind of shocking.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I think you were one of our first Conundrum Company things.
Yeah. I thought I was invited to the server on accident.
Oh, God, no.
I left. I was like, oh, Josh was like, what are you doing? Get back in here. I was like, oh, fuck. Ah.
Did you really leave? That's hilarious.
I was like, oh, like, I'm sorry. I don't know.
No. I remember early on, he's like, I know this guy, Commune. He's fucking amazing. He has a one-shot idea. He wants to pitch it. So I was like, sure, bring him in. And I listened to him on your podcast. I was like, this is good stuff.
Yeah.
I like this.
So it was, I think I did the In the Heart of Valenrell one shot on, which was the first one I did that was on Twee, not twitch.tv/the6ofnar.
Yes. Yes, his personal channel.
Yes. That we retrofit into a wonderful community. So starting with Conundrum Company and then evolving into what became Off the Rails, how's it been seeing the community kind of ebb and flow and change over the course of the last 7 or 8 I mean, 10 months at this point, right?
Yeah, I guess you're, 10 months.
You're past a baby, dude.
Holy shit. I'm a full-grown adult.
A full-grown man.
It's been very strange to see. I think we're up to 9,000 on that channel.
Yeah.
Which is a crazy milestone to hit. The community support has been overwhelming. Yeah. Even with different shows we're like afraid to put out there. We do, you know, occasional one shots. We do the Highlight Heroes show that they do every other Monday. And seeing people just attach to things and be like, we like this. This is good. Yeah. It lets us breathe easier knowing we can do more stuff than just our campaigns and people will watch it.
Yeah.
And our community is so nice and so supportive and very interactive, which is good. Our chats are always nice and talkative, which I love.
I love seeing people freak out, especially with like episodes like CC last night.
Oh God.
People lose their fucking minds. And it's really great to see.
Me included.
You're like, what?
This is fucking bananas. B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
Holy, this shit is bananas. I think it's been really cool to kind of sit back and just watch it, right? Because
not just watch, you've been a part of this.
No. I know, but I mean more in an aspect of like, you know, getting to see this community kind of from its infancy, really just a perfect example of what a community should be. I think that it really touches on how personable and relatable you, Josh and Parker, are, right? Because you guys are the heart and soul of Twee, right?
Well, thank you.
And I think that without your guys' incredible leadership, judgment, and care, it wouldn't be where it's at.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. You're like, I can't take the compliment.
I can't take compliments. Yeah.
But really, it's been an absolute joy to be a part of it and to see what everyone has been able to accomplish inside of this amazing bubble of truly caring people.
Honestly, it's been a labor of love. We've also donated our time and effort because I'm going to give a little inside information, guys. We don't make any money off that channel. It circles right back into the channel for things we buy for it. So we're literally all doing this just because we love the channel and making the content and the community we're building. So it's just, it's not that difficult.
Yeah.
At times it gets a little much and we have to take a step back. Like collectively, we'll all check with each other, be like, you good? You need to take a day. We'll take over some of your stuff.
What's amazing is that translates so perfectly, like it being a labor of love and everyone like really putting in care, especially with prospective campaigns. You can tell that CC is Josh's baby, right? Like,
oh yeah.
The amount of love and care, and even with the newly minted Off the Rails campaign.
Is that a segue?
It's a segue.
Oh no. I've heard about these. Your famous segues.
My famous segue. They're not great.
No, they're perfect.
You're at best. So you took over the Friday slot at Twee and brought the, what was this? The fucking late night wars? What am I talking about?
I stole it.
I usurped the Friday slot.
Yes, I will take Fridays. Lightning.
And you lead the table for the Off the Rails campaign, which has Josh, Sloan, Art Plebe, Sarah as Coffee, and Dinkles as players.
Yes.
What has that journey been like for you so far?
It's been a fucking blast.
They're so horny on Maine,
dude. They're so horny. It's crazy how every NPC I put in front of them, like, I could fuck this somehow. Even down to one of my favorite NPCs is a big vat of ooze. It's just literally, anyone who knows what an Oblex is, that is a bartender in my world. And even occasionally they're like, how could I fuck this thing without dying? The conversation I believe we had in one of the early episodes.
Oh, it's incredible.
Yeah. They're all fantastic players and I love that.
Yeah. They're an incredible group of role players, along with you guys at CC. What is it like getting to play with that group of people and getting to craft that adventure with them?
With them is the correct way to say that, because they're very involved.
Yeah.
And it is is an experience that I hope every DM gets to have at one point in their lifetime. Getting to play with a group of people who are so invested in what their character does, in what they think, even like while the stream isn't on, I'll get messages from them or I'll see like tweets of them thinking about their character. I'm like, yeah, that's nice. I like that. But yeah, they're just so well thought out and they gel together in such a unique way that I don't think I've ever had a party do before, which is very nice.
It's really cool because I think there's something so incredibly rare and so incredibly special about that organic nature to a campaign.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've found it maybe twice, you know, and I've managed to keep on to those players and kind of try and catch that lightning in a bottle. You know, I finished two campaigns. My least favorite campaign by far, Curse of Strahd, which was like a book that I was like, oh, I hate books. You boys gotta read? Fuck yeah. This.
Exactly.
And then a homebrew campaign that spanned a year and a half and ended with the party killing Tiamat. So I'm like, you know what? Good time.
Good shit.
So being able to, through that campaign, which was really kind of like what I call my lowest moment as a dungeon master, going into the start of the peak, right? And this kind of like, I'm able to tell stories and weave backstory into narrative and kind of work in tandem with my players to make this world work for everybody.
Right.
Has been interesting. It's been really fun. And it's really cool to see on the opposite spectrum, you kind of start that journey with these new, players and really kind of kick the ball rolling.
Yeah. It's been quite a journey. We're only 12 episodes.
I was going to say, like, you're fresh.
It's, yeah, a little over 2 months we've been doing this campaign, but already it's like something I look forward to every week. Something we are always excited about. No one shows up to the session like tired or like, yeah, I had a long day, but let's get through this.
Like, let's fucking go. Like, the hype levels hit 800.
Exactly. And having that much investment in your game, something that I could never ask for. It's something that they can only give willingly. And it's one of the greatest gifts you could ever give a DM. It's just that investment in the game, in their world, in the story, and returning that in kind with, you know, involving backstory elements, giving their characters moments to shine, making sure everyone is, you know, having a good time and making sure you check in with them saying, hey, is anything you want to change? Anything's going wrong? You know, let me know. But it's a very easy back and forth that we have there. And it I think it makes it a lot more fun for both of us.
For sure. When it comes to kind of creating that correspondence between Dungeon Master and player, how does that get started for you? I mean, are you just kind of throwing back backstory ideas? Do you let them kind of take the reins of what they want their characters to be and then they give it to you and you kind of form the world around that? How does that process start for you?
I encourage everyone when they're making their characters to create their own place, their own like religion if they want to, their own character like idea for their class. Like if you want to reflavor it in a way and create something totally different and unique, I'm totally fine with that. I believe Sloan, we also homebrewed a druid class for them to play in this campaign. Because they were like, I want to play a druid, but nothing speaks to me. And I was like, well, let's talk about that. Exactly. So they made their own class. Josh made his own town. Like he has a town that he made up for his own campaign.
Yeah.
And I encourage them to also ask me if there's anything they're looking for or anything they want to be incorporated in.
Like, yeah.
I want to be from, you know, the university, the wizard school. Okay, well, this is what it is. Here it is. This is what you would know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I very much encourage them to come up with whatever they want and then hand it off to me so I can fit it in.
Yeah.
I don't like going the other way because I feel like it's limiting in some ways.
Oh, sure. For sure.
But that's just me.
Yeah. I definitely play the other way. I've gotten this document together of like the homebrew world that I operate in for the time being and kind of breaking down the different continents, the different cities within those continents and being like, okay, what feels like a natural starting point for you guys? you know, here's kind of like the different breakdowns of like what's happening in these regions and like what kind of speaks to you guys, and we'll take it from there. You know what I mean? So, and then characters are made. How do you work in incorporating backstory?
That is easier to do depending on the backstory.
Sure.
Whenever I get a character backstory, I do the DM thing of looking for the blank spaces. I say, where did they not describe something that I can just stick it in or twist Where were they not in the room?
Don't mind if I do.
Yeah, you weren't in the room where it happens. The room where it happens.
The room where it happens?
No. Oh. They don't see how my... Never mind, I'm not going to say that. please don't follow me down that path, audience. But yeah, it can't be too heavily like hit over the head. I usually just give hints until they get close enough to latch onto one of those, and then if they follow it, they get pulled down that character's
the rabbit hole.
Yeah, that arc.
Yeah.
But it's just little hints and teases to keep them moving in a direction.
Yeah.
And the best thing players can do to help out with this is gravitate to something.
Yeah.
Even if it's not the backstory element for your character, or it could not even be a backstory element at all.
Yeah.
Have an interest. Your character has to have an interest in doing something. Otherwise your DM can't move the story along.
Yeah. There's something about that idea of latching onto an ideal or a moral or some sort of goal and being like, okay, this I can work with. This I can work with.
I want to get this accomplished. Your DM goes, thank you. Like, I'll work on that.
Finally.
Yeah. It's not just like, I don't know. What do you guys want to do today? I don't know. Where do you guys want to go? Like, shit.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah. But that is the best way to get character backstory stuff put into the game, is have them look for it or actively like pursue that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I think very similar. I like having the players just do a little write up, whether it be like a paragraph or whatever, just kind of like, okay, where did you start? Where are you at now?
Yeah.
And the same thing, kind of finding those blank spaces, like, okay, you were just kind of fucking around for a few years. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Don't mind if I use this.
I woke up one day without my memory. Oh, you're fucked.
I don't know where my dad is. Really?
Mm.
Interesting.
Be a shame if someone killed him.
Yeah, I like tying a lot of things into the world and kind of making, because I think that's another aspect that helps homebrew worlds feel a lot more natural.
Oh yeah.
Is like when personal experience can be tied back to like a setting or an event. Mm-hmm. Like if there's a, you know, some sort of festival that happens and this thing happened at this point, it's like, okay, like I can tie an emotional response back to an event.
Yeah.
Which makes, you know, a character be like, oh, fuck this festival, dog. I ain't going. This sucks ass, you know, or whatever. A source of joy because it's like a fleeting memory they have of the last time with like a loved one or whatever. So, yeah, I completely agree with that.
It was the thought of tying backstories for characters to the campaign.
Mm.
It doesn't always need to be a tie back to the main like campaign thread, like the big thread of the campaign.
Yeah.
You can let them be standalone adventures that, you know, lead different directions, give them a break from the main story.
For sure.
It is a good, interesting plot thread if you can somehow get like a little piece of it and tie it back to the main story.
So kind of rounding back to the homebrew process. Do you like creating your own monsters?
I do very much like homebrewing like creatures.
Yeah.
I think one of the things I do more often though is I take something from the monster manual. I just like search a monster of a certain CR, and then I just completely change its description, and it's a whole different creature.
Yeah, that's valid.
That's honestly the easiest way to do it. You look for something similar in the book, and you just change the name of the type of damage.
Yeah.
Its physical features. It's a whole fucking other thing.
It's incredible.
Never know. Never know.
That's pretty much what I do.
Honestly. Exactly. Yeah, it's what every DM does. They just don't say it.
It's really nice, though, to just be like, all right, it's not cold damage anymore. It's lightning damage. And it's just, it's 2 feet taller, so it's completely different. Completely different.
Yeah. And usually if I create something that's like actually the thing I create, it's because I'm taking something that exists and altering it. Mm-hmm. So I want to have those aspects with this other one added on.
Yeah, sure.
Or it's just a completely fucking random thing I made up. And it's like, hey, this one's crazy, huh? It's weird.
Hey, ooh, throw that at them. Would you look at that? Yeah.
Yeah. But I do tend to use character stat blocks from the book and just describe them differently.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I think there's something cool. I like making new like golem typages or different types of dragons. Like I made a psionic dragon that was really fun, and like just a bunch of different stuff that's like, you know, we have the tools, just change it. Just make it work for you.
Pretty much. You might love the Matt Colville book. I don't know if you ever
Strongholds and Followers.
Yeah, with the
I love it. I love
the gem dragons.
Ugh. Yes, dude. Have you seen the Tome of Beasts books?
I have not.
Kobold Press. There are a lot of fucking wonky little creations that are really cool. I highly, highly recommend it. Highly recommend it.
What I have realized that I love recently is Pathfinder creatures. And I know this is a D&D kind of centric podcast.
It's a tabletop podcast. You talk about what you want.
I want to play Pathfinder 2 so fucking bad.
I want to as well. I don't know any of the rules. I've never played Pathfinder, period. It looks so fun.
Their creatures are way more dangerous, and healing in general is harder. So it's like fifth edition on hard mode.
Cool. Dark Souls.
Yeah. Pretty much. It's survival D&D.
So fifth edition, fifth ed is peaceful Minecraft.
Yeah. We're in creative mode on 5e.
Yeah. Okay. Cause I looked through the Pathfinder 2e like handbook, and I'm like, man, it's a meaty ass book.
Oh yeah.
And I'm just like reading through it. And then I looked at like the, whatever the equivalent of their monster manual is, and I'm like, oh, this is cool shit. I love seeing the different variations between like Wizards D&D and then the Paizo Pathfinder stuff. It's really cool.
Yeah. I love taking inspiration from those creatures that aren't in D&D and that Pathfinder book, and just sort of making mechanics for them for fifth edition.
Yes.
That's a lot of what I've been working on recently.
Oh, for sure.
Because there's some crazy ass creatures in there that I love.
I love taking when it comes to homebrew, I like taking creatures from like content I enjoy. So I've taken a lot of creatures from like The Witcher or like Bloodborne and like kind of statted them to be like D&D monsters, and it's just been really fun.
One of my favorite things that I've sort of done, like what you just said, is I don't like how gargoyles function, because I feel like they're just unimpressive and they're just sort of like gargoyles, stones sometimes. Yeah. I treat them like the Weeping Angels from Doctor Who, where they don't move until you look away from them, and then they move, and if they touch you, it's bad.
You're fucked.
Yes.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
I
think that's way more fun.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. Running back into your time as a dungeon master.
Yes.
Has there been anything, what have been the biggest lessons you've learned from your misdeeds,
my misdeeds,
past campaigns that maybe weren't up to your par now?
My main issue I tried to work on overall is knowing where the campaign is leading. Like knowing where that end game is,
yeah,
and sticking to it.
Oh, that's a mood, dude.
Yeah,
that's a fucking mood.
Because I always like, oh, but what if this? Oh, but maybe over here. It's like, we can't do that. You're already into the adventure, and things make sense to go this way. It's like, but this is cool too.
There's something about getting excited about ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why when the party like fucking changes the whole script, I'm like, oh yes,
thank God,
perfect. Yeah. Yeah. I'm gonna go off on a tangent.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, that's valid.
Yeah. Sticking to that already written down thing is like I've read it in. It's set in stone.
It's etched in stone. I can't do a fucking thing about it.
Yeah, that reveal has to stay there, and I can't like move it up, or I can't. That's another thing too, is moving reveals up because you just want to get it out.
Yeah, I am guilty of doing that.
100%. I mean,
come on, man.
It's so much fun. It's like, nah, they should know now. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a bitch that gets way too impatient about surprises.
Yes.
So like when when it comes to
I feel that,
like campaign reveals and shit like that, I really leave it open to what the players are doing. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of leave it this amorphous thing that's like, if they follow the right trail and they do the right thing, they'll find it. You know, they will. Yeah. They will discover it sooner or later. It is well and truly dependent on them, I think. Mm-hmm. And all I can do is lay those hints and you know, kind of smile behind the DM screen of like, are you going to find it? Mm-hmm. Let us see.
You go left? Shit.
Son of a bitch!
Damn it. There also two other things that are just like overall DM things that I do,
yeah,
that I feel bad about, but the party loves. So it's kind of like a conflicting two sides of a coin, leveling too quickly and giving too many magic items.
Oh fuck.
I constantly feel like you're just like, all right, more levels, more items. And
yeah.
And the party's like level 6 and they've got a legendary sword. It's like,
oh no, god.
That's not how that works.
In my Curse of Strahd game that I ran, I gave my level 5 ranger rogue a gunblade, like from Final Fantasy.
Oh.
Like I made a gunblade and I'm like,
that's so good.
I gave it was 2 sessions. I'm like, I shouldn't have fucking done it.
Yeah.
Oh fuck.
It's got a plus what?
Yeah, it was like a plus 2. Like,
yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, okay, plus 2 is good. That means it's like an okay weapon. And then I'm like, I'm seeing him in combat. I'm like, oh. No. Oh, cool. Yeah. I will fuck myself immediately.
I just realized like recently, I in the last episode of Off the Rails, I put a tattoo and engraver like studio,
yeah,
where they can get magical tattoos and they can get their weapons engraved and upgraded, and they also just got a fuck ton of money, and I'm like, well shit. I didn't think this through.
Just
no.
I remember when I was running my last campaign, they were leveling up like every 3 sessions.
Yeah.
I'm like, take a level, you're fine. Take a level and just fuck it. Here's a feat, you know, like, yeah. Like we're just getting buck wild and ridiculous.
What I did in this campaign to try and mitigate that is I wait until I feel physically sick that they haven't leveled. And I'm like, all right, I'll wait one more session, then I'll level them. And it worked.
Oh my God.
It worked so far.
Wait until I'm physically sick.
Yeah. I'm like, God, I feel so bad for them. All right, I'll give it to them next time.
All right. Take the level. Oh, that's so good.
It just sort of helps prolong that, like each level is its own experience in growing in power and then feeling like that power matches what the world is.
Oh, for sure.
And then you get that boost and you're like, yeah, we can take out anything.
Yeah,
except
yeah.
that.
And then you get stomped in the face and then
exactly.
You're like, I need another level, please. kind of speaking about stomping in the face. What makes a good villain for you? What creates a villain that really kind of entices you as a dungeon master and you feel like ropes in your players?
What makes a good villain? It's got to be about that motivation, baby.
Yeah, right.
It's all about that twisted sense of reality and morals.
Yeah, you love to see it.
I want a villain to explain everything about their plot and have the heroes go, shit, that makes sense.
I get it.
Hey, guys, we should talk about this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you can also just do your over the top, just monstrous evil villains. As long as their motivation is good, I think.
Yeah.
That sense of villainous will come through. Now, if you want to make them hate the villain, just a blatant display of cruelty. If you make sure your party's okay with whatever level they're okay with, the pinnacle of that level of okayness, that's what you need to hit. You need to get it as close to that line as possible.
Obviously, like, I've used the RPG consent checklist for, like,
very good tool.
Amazing tool. Please use it if you do not. You never know. Like, you never want to assume what your players are or are not comfortable with.
Yes. And even if you do the consent checklist, just make sure, again, to check in with them. Because feelings change. People change.
100%. Mm-hmm. And we played in the last session. And I wanted to have one of those villains that were, like, somebody that you just absolutely hate, right? Yeah. So they're standing in a line, and this mercenary is like, okay, well, you know, we'll make a deal. I'll give you your friend back if you get to choose in this line who dies. Like, make a choice.
Oh, beautiful.
And they're like, you you didn't specify who, picks up a kid and is like, well, you made your choice. And they're just like, what the fuck? What the fuck? Thankfully, they
saved it.
Yes.
Okay.
So it was not like a, you know.
Okay. God, that's fucking spicy, though.
But I'm like, hey, man, these are fucking mercenaries that operate in a city in the worst possible way. Like, they don't fucking care.
They don't. Why would they?
And it's like, they're not. They don't take kindly to nobles like being shitty to them, being like, well, you didn't specify. We're all about word. And she's like, okay, cool.
It's like, yeah, I didn't say I was gonna do whatever you said, though. Stab, stab, stab.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
So yeah, I completely get that, but I agree when it comes to like the villain of opinion.
Yes.
See what they're doing, and you can empathize with what they're doing, but the means never justify that end. You know? Yeah. And I love it. I love it. What's your favorite villain that you've done?
My favorite villain. I don't think any of the campaigns I've run have gone long enough to get to that point, honestly.
Sure.
Which is why I'm very grateful to have such a good party, and it looks like we're on the rails to go to a very long and healthy campaign.
I think so.
I don't know what I can tell you, actually.
Oh.
There is a villain. Maybe
after I end the recording.
Maybe a little commune exclusive. There is an element of the city of Abaddon that the players haven't seen yet.
Okay.
That is one of my favorite villain type characters I've made.
Oh, that's spicy.
It's spicy.
Oh, that's spicy, dude. Mm. Yeah. I enjoy the concept of like Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a character in one of the campaigns that I've run who, you know, was an altruistic head of like an arcane academy, right? Mm-hmm. This war breaks out, and it's this sort of uprising of the Drow people, and you know, the continent changes, and this man sort of becomes this de facto like general. And after time away from said continent, the party sees him again, and he's like super cold, and he's like drafting children for war, and it's like this really kind of grim like reflection of like what the wrong choice can do to a person.
Mm-hmm.
And whether he wants to be doing that or not, he feels like that cold steel exterior is what's necessary.
Yeah.
And so the party seeing like someone that they've built a really strong connection and trust with, like really kind of exuding the worst aspects of their humanity. And I think that's always really interesting to touch on, because I think anybody has the potential to be a villain, right? Oh, anybody has the potential to be a hero.
Yeah.
It's all what about you do with your path. Moment.
Exactly.
100%. 150%.
Follow every character's tree back to that fork where they could have gone bad, they could have gone good, and they went good or bad.
100%. I like to round out these conversations with a nice question.
Okay.
If you could give yourself a piece of advice, something you know now that you wish you would have known when you started Dungeon Mastering, what would that be?
Around the end of January of 2021, you're going to want to invest in GameStop. Just put all your money in GameStop, you piece of shit. Get in there early. It's going to look low. It's going to sound like bad advice, but you're going to want to get in on GameStop. No, I'm kidding.
You're really gonna want to dump everything.
Just please, I need the rent.
Damn it.
What would I say? I probably would have, when I first started DMing, yeah, I would have just told myself to get out there and do it. Just ask friends, because, you know, I didn't have the courage earlier on to just be like, hey, you guys want to play D&D? But turns out everyone I asked was like, yeah, I'll play D&D. Sounds like fun. Yeah, we've got nothing going on. Let's play some D&D. And it's been a fantastic time.
To see it. Well, Sean, Mr. Chicken Dance, thank
it's
you
me.
For jumping on and joining me on this long overdue episode of Commune.
Is this going to go up before or after I call you out on our part?
Probably the same week, which is going to be really incredible.
I love it so much.
Because you guys post on Mondays, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I post on Fridays.
So I'm going to post it on Monday and go like, ah, Commune's never had me on his show. And then Friday is going to
And then Friday, I'm gonna tag you and Lore Dump and be like, hey.
Hey, is this you?
This you, motherfucker?
I love it. Oh, God,
so this is your shameless plug time. Tell the people where to find you.
I get free shameless plug time. Guys, listen to the Commune DM Essentials Kit. It's a fantastic program run by an amazing human being. I would love it if you could all go rate it on iTunes. Make sure to tell your family and friends about it. Tweet about it if you can. Get the word out. Everyone should be watching this show. Everyone should be listening. And be sure to watch Commune on Twitch. I believe he's doing a Nuzlocke challenge.
I am indeed. Yeah.
I have no shame in this plug. This is my greatest plug. And if you'd like to, check out the Welcome In as well. We have a lot of fun programming on most of the weekends because we all have full-time jobs.
Yeah, you can find all the links to Sean and his projects and the Welcome In the description of this episode. Thank you so much for jumping on and
anytime
being a part of this. You're an amazing human, and I'm happy to know you.
Oh, get out, buddy. No. You've activated my mirror force, Kaiba.
All right. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye, everybody.
First off, here's a huge thank you to Sean for finally jumping on and having this incredible conversation with me. You can find the link to all of his socials and projects in the description of this episode. And hopefully, this means our bitter, bitter war has come to an end. My biggest takeaway from this conversation is that everyone needs to start somewhere. If you want to run a game of D&D, do it. If you want to branch out and try other game systems like Pathfinder, do it. The only thing limiting us is our fear of failure. And trust me, every DM has failed at some point. What matters is how you evolve and become better despite your lowest moments. So, please leave us a review. It really helps out the show and lets me know what you guys think. And with that said, we'll see you guys in our next adventure.